Okay, welcome back. This is episode 3 of the Horror Quarters podcast. We're here with a good friend of mine, Pride Pierce.
Hey, hey.
And Michelangelo Blackwell.
Hello.
Thanks for showing up, guys. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
What's going on, man? We were talking about Get Out a couple of minutes ago. What'd you guys think of that one?
Yeah, my end, I loved it. You know.
Yeah.
I actually saw it. It was myself, my wife, and another couple of good friends of ours. And even from the very beginning, I think it had only been out maybe a day, maybe two.
Right.
So it was fresh on the scene. Nobody, no spoilers, hadn't read anything about it. You know, just seen the commercials and whatnot. And even from the very beginning, you know, when my man was walking down the street, you know, and he was being followed. And he was just like the way he spoke, the way he talked, sounded like a brother would talk to me and us. So cats were already chuckling in the audience. He's like, man, I ain't going to fuck around. You know, these people. You know what I mean? You know.
Right.
So we were already just chuckling from the beginning. And then it went straight from that to him getting, you know, being snatched up. So to me, it set the tone really nicely in that it showed there was going to be some humor in it, but also showed that there was going to be some horror in it right away.
Sure.
Right away. You know, first minute or two, you know, on there. And then, of course, the story was pretty... To me, I mean, of course, you can always compare it to the stories like Stepford-wise, whatever you want to do, you know what I mean? But still, to me, like they say, people always want something the same but new.
Right.
And that's what this was. It was the same but new. It was a new spin on that kind of story, you know what I mean? That really, I thought it was done fantastic, you know?
Yeah. What'd you think, Mike?
Oh, I loved it. I mean, when I first heard about it, there was a lot of buzz going around it, talking about Get Out, Get Out. And I was like, man, what's all this buzz going on with this movie? Mm-hmm. And then I found out that... what's his name? Jordan Peele directed it. So I was like, oh man, this is a little different. Cause I remember from doing comedy and stuff, but, he directed it and everything like that. I'm like, all right, I'm intrigued now.
Right.
There's a lot of buzz and everything. So I went to the theater and saw it by myself. And, like Pride just said from the beginning, it just grabs your attention.
Yeah.
And, I loved how the story was laid out, and it was just something completely different that I had never seen before in terms of that blend of comedy and horror in the same film. So it's kind of like it has those peaks and valleys that really made it a great film.
Yeah, and I felt, I'd like to hear you guys' opinion on this. To me, I felt that it didn't say, hey, all white people are like this. To me, when I watched it, I was like... This family's like I mean, were they successful in that? I mean,
You know, I agree. And I think that's a good point. You know what I mean?
Because
I think that if you push too hard in that kind of area, that's what you're going to get. And it's going to lead to a backlash and it's going to overshadow the story.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I agree 100%. Like, I never looked at that and thought, this is how all white people are. Now, conversely, I'll say, as a black man, I think for most black people, since we grow up, and probably, you know, Hispanics, et cetera, since we grow up in areas that a lot of times are more populated by white people, we generally don't associate something as, okay, this is all white people whenever something happens. Right. Whereas, you know, I won't say many, but I have met some white people who do kind of that look because they might not have grown up around any black people.
Right.
And all they might have seen is a music video or this and that, and they assume all of them are Tupac, or they assume, you know, what have you. So... I think with the film, I didn't look at it like that at all. I looked at it like, okay, that group of people are insane, you know?
Right.
But I think that that's what I would expect a minority perspective would be. I think it would be interesting to hear from white people that they're saying all white people are evil. But I don't think so. I mean, the white people I've talked to that have watched it, they didn't have that view of it. They just looked like, oh man, it was, you know, either they liked it or they didn't. And, you know, but I didn't hear any of them. They were like, oh, they're demonizing white people. But that's because I thought they were very nuanced in how they did it.
Well, he did a great job doing that. That new trailer for Us, that looks incredible, right? That whole take on their clones or whatever it is that's going on.
Themselves.
Right.
It's like they're being chased around by themselves.
Right.
Which is crazy. That's a crazy concept.
Right. Like, it is.
To be running from yourself, you know? I don't know. I don't know. Like, I can't wait for that to come out.
I just don't know how he's going to end it. How do you get out of that?
Yeah.
I'm sure he's got an awesome ending for it, but I'm just curious.
It'd be good to see. It'll be real cool to see.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's looking like it's going to be crazy. He set a track record already, so.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I'm excited about it.
So we recently worked together on a project titled Playset.
Yes, sir.
We started that. You know what? It was a year ago. It was like February you came over for the first... Just walk around of the playset.
I think that's right. Yeah, that's true.
And then I had went out of town for work for a while. came back and we picked it up. That was a fun shoot.
Oh, huh? Yeah. Playset was real cool. It was, the thing about it was, because if we rewind it back, I came to your place, I think, to borrow your Mac, because I use PC primarily, and I needed something that I had to convert and whatever the case was.
Yeah.
And I want to say that was around December initially. And that was, maybe. And when that happened, you didn't really have it fleshed out yet. You had like an outline and you just mentioned it. That's, you said, right, I got something I'm thinking about. It's called Playset. And once you said it's called Playset and it's horror, mm-hmm, I was like, that's already sounding like catchy to me. Excuse me. That's already sounding catchy to me. You know what I mean? Like, Playset, horror, I know you're going to come up with something. You know what I mean? That's going to be pretty nice. And so then, like, I think you're right. February came back and we started talking about it a little bit more, got a look at the location that you wanted to use to shoot it.
You're right. It was, it was around December.
Yeah.
February must have been the first time you came after that.
I came back, and we talked about it. And, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. I thought you had the actors that you had for it were fantastic, and I really liked the story arc in it. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was something to me that I hadn't really seen before, And so I think that's always cool to explore something that you haven't really come up, up into before. And so I really enjoyed it. I thought it was real good.
I like how we didn't show anything. Actually called me to talk about it and said, dude, you didn't show anything. We didn't show any demon, ghost, monster.
Right. No tip in the hat. None of that,
Yeah, and I found for actors, like when I found that Kristen Sammons, that was all online.
Yeah.
Instead of bringing him in to auditions, it's easier to go look for reels on YouTube and came across her. So,
well, I'll say real quick on Kristen too. She was great, man. She was a trooper. Oh, she was there as long as she needed to be,
Yeah.
And it got cold, what I mean? It got a little cold that night, And she just knocked it out, man.
Right.
And correspondence afterwards, everything I heard was positive. So, hats off to Kristen. She made sure the shoot went how it needed to go. And, I'm excited for people to get a chance to see Playset.
Yeah.
Over on my deck right now, I'm, in development, pre-production actually. Now rolling into production, fairly shortly on a horror comedy called Lich Lord Dan and the Fall of Man.
Okay.
And it's kind of a passion project for me because it kind of encapsulates a lot of my youth.
Okay.
It deals with Dungeons and Dragons. It deals with the office environment, which I was a cubicle warrior for quite a while myself. So jockey, cubicle warrior, however you want to put it. And so I think I first came up with it around 2013 and then flirted with doing it a few times and rewrote the script a few times, and now's the time. We got an outstanding actor to be our main antagonist, Michelangelo Blackwell.
He's
playing Danforth Worthington, who's one of the two brothers who are the core kind of the film. He's the older brother who has a little bit of beef with the younger brother.
Right.
And so now it's the right time now.
The waves.
Yes, the waves.
Yeah, outstanding job, man.
Thank you.
That was shot well, it was executed well. What kind of background do you have? Is it, well, I know you mentioned theater earlier, but.
Yeah, as an actor, my background is a lot of theater. Started out in theater, actually. Was sitting in church service and saw a play. It was a very short play, about 15 minutes, but it delivered like a real message. It also had comedy.
Sure.
And it had something you could relate to. So when I saw those three things, I just sat there like, man, how come I'm not up there?
Right.
And so from there, it progressed to let me get out there and see if this is for me or not. So I did a couple of plays and didn't have any lines or anything for the first one.
Right.
The second one, I had like two lines. And then from there, it just really progressed. The director at that time, Sharon Lewis Campbell, she really liked how I was acting and everything like that. So gave me, more serious roles and everything like that. And then we just finished up a play last year in October.
Okay.
Where I played the role of a pimp. And it was centered around a message of domestic violence.
Okay.
So it had a real message. I loved it. We had real therapists there in the audience, in case people, that were in the audience needed any type of help or assistance that they needed to talk to somebody about. So that play sold out at the Box Theater the last two nights.
Wow.
The first night it didn't sell out because it rained.
Okay.
So it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The last two nights sold out. We had to turn people away. But theater progressed into film, and I'm just loving acting in general. I love it all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one thing with Lich Lord Dan, like being a horror comedy, for me, I don't really look at myself as someone who, as a director, is kind of a pure horror guy.
Okay.
I enjoy horror films big time. You know, there's been a lot of them that have kind of left a mark on me or inspired me or whatnot. And I'll mention a couple of those in a minute. But what I really, really love, though, are like horror comedies, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
So like Cabin in the Woods, you know, Shaun of the Dead, you know, Army of Darkness, Slither, you know, all those kind of horror comedies. Because to me, I always love that the roller coaster seems a little, like it has a few more twists and turns to me.
Right.
When you incorporate, when you're kind of navigating between comedy and horror. Kind of like we mentioned with Get Out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's part of what made Get Out so good to me is that, you know, you could have one moment where you're laughing almost hysterically.
Right.
And then you could have another moment where you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah, you know, you right.
know? And to me, that, you know, that's kind of what I really enjoy, you know, in horror projects is when, like, they're horror comedies, you know. And then as far as, like, just an example of some of the films that kind of inspired me, man, like, just in general in horror, I left the impact, I'll say, on me in horror. And I'll relate a story for one is, like, Halloween. The first Halloween, I want to say I was around maybe 10 years old when it came out, and I was living in Peoria, Illinois at the time. We had just moved there from Chicago. Didn't really know anybody yet. Was new in the area. And our home literally was on the edge of the woods. Okay, so like at nighttime, it would get super dark. And I mean, you could hear the frogs. You could hear the crickets, whatever else. You know, there wasn't that much light pollution. And anyway, I remember the night I saw it, my parents hadn't allowed me to watch it. But I got home early. And then when I got home, my uncle was supposed to be there. And he was supposed to be watching me. But he wasn't there. He had snuck out, was messing with some girl or something like that. And so anyway, I came home. I'm flipping through the channels. And it was, you know, it was fall. So it got dark early. And we're talking Illinois. So, you know, it was getting dark. You know what I mean? And so I saw Halloween was on, you know. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'm not supposed to watch this. I'm going to watch this. You know, mom and dad are home. So I started watching it. And the way our house was laid out at the time, it was like you kind of had a corner where this was like the kitchen, the living room. Then you had like a family room over here, dining room back around the corner, my dad's office. And then there was a huge, you know, patio door, but we didn't have a patio, you know, right there.
Yeah.
That was around the corner. And so I'm sitting on the couch, like right over here on this side. It's dark.
Yeah.
I'm watching Halloween. I'm getting scared watching Halloween. You know what I mean? I'm on the couch. I start squeezing over, trying to get as far into the corner as I can because I don't want Mike to come around the corner and just like reach around that corner and grab me.
Right.
You know? And by the time it ended, my parents got home and they found me like halfway under the couch.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like I lifted up the couch a little bit and was just in the cut because I was thinking if he came in, I could try to pull it down, you know, and he wouldn't see me. You know, but the thing, one thing about it was, like I said, I was from Illinois. And a lot of those houses, a lot of those places they were at, that looked like places I'm walking by every day. You know what I mean? So it wasn't just like I'm watching a thing with Michael Myers and I live in like a high rise in some big city or whatever.
Yeah.
No, it looked like I might have just passed that house yesterday, you know, when I was walking to school. So it really, the authenticity of it to me was one big thing, you know. And then two, another thing with him was just that silent killer. You know, like I had never really encountered, I guess the only thing that related to was like watching Jaws the first time.
Okay.
Where there's no discussion, there's no argument, there's no bargaining, there's not even any listening to some kind of cheesy joke, you know, from the killer.
Yeah.
It's just he's coming for you and then it's done. You know what I mean? And so for me that was pretty terrifying.
What about you, Michael? As a kid, any movies kind of scare you growing up?
Oh man. You know, my parents didn't really allow me to watch a lot of scary stuff, man.
Okay.
Like, they try to shield me from it.
Right.
Yeah, Freddy Krueger, man. I watched a little bit of that, and I was just so terrified, man. I'm going to be honest with you. I watched, like, a couple of minutes, about 5 minutes, and I saw those claws, man, and I turned it off. I ran into my room, and I had nightmares. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it, man.
Yeah, man. That was freaky as a kid, too, seeing those movies, man.
Yeah.
I would have dreams about him as well, with the claws, except he would have two sets. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
One set of two, and that would freak me out. Michael would always freak me out, the theme song,
the piano
as a kid. But we were talking about Insidious earlier.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed those.
What I loved the most about Insidious was some of those parts where they would catch you off guard, you know?
Right.
Like, you come around the corner and someone's right there.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, how does that, you know, like, as a filmmaker, I know that that must be hard to actually capture that, you know? And I don't know, maybe what, I don't, what's your perspective? Because that's one of the things that I loved about horror in general is those surprise moments. Like, how do you actually capture that?
Well, for me, and what I tell people, you know, that they'll say, oh, I watched this whatever movie. I watched Insidious, for example, and it wasn't scary. Okay, where did you watch it? Oh, I watched it with the kids running around during the day. Okay, to me, right. It's all about sound. So I think if you were to watch, you know, if you were to watch that maybe by yourself at night with some good sound, it's a different story than watching it here in this room. So I think with horror movies or scary movies in general, it's timing, I think, with the editing and the sound design. I mean, what do you think?
I'd agree with you in sound, especially. You know, that's one thing I always respected about your filmmaking is you're always very meticulous with your sound, man. So I've always, you know, I've always tried to look at that and learn from it. You know, but I think the atmosphere 100% is what makes it all, you know. And on both sides, the atmosphere of the film itself, like, you know, the environment you're looking at, are they building tension? You know what I mean, already? Right. And so if they're building tension, you're already going to be on the edge waiting for something. Sometimes they'll deflate it because they'll kind of give you a fake out where it won't, and nothing will happen.
Right. Uh-huh.
But if they're building that atmosphere, you'll already be tensed up. You know what I mean? So if they do have something happen, yeah, you're going to, you know, you're going to react to that. You know, but then also, like you said, the atmosphere that you're viewing it in, too. You know what I mean? So if you're watching it in an environment conducive to being scared, like I was as a little kid watching Halloween on that couch by myself at 10 years old, watching a grown man kill folks and chase little kids.
Right.
You know what I mean? And whatnot. If you're watching in that environment, that's a good point, because it kind of brings the question, like, why would you watch a horror film and not be in that environment? Just like, why would you watch a comedy and be pissed off? You know what I mean? It's like, you know what you're about to do. So why don't you make sure you're in the mind state to be receptive of it, at least?
Yeah.
You know? I would agree with you on that.
Now, unless there's the movies where you're going to have fun with the blood and the cuts. But I think for, you know, certain movies like your Halloweens and Insidious, Conjuring, I think less is more. Mm-hmm. The more you don't show, I think, is more effective.
Well, if I could bring up too on atmosphere and like what you're showing in our two is another film that really terrified me, even though, you know, it's not necessarily thought necessarily as a horror film, but it's, you know, in that lane. I mean, the first one was Aliens. When I saw Aliens, man, it was around that same time when I saw Halloween. Man, I can't remember, maybe I was 12 or 13 or something, but you know, when those face huggers came out, man, and were just giving cats the business, you know, or like when they knocked over the container when Ripley was asleep with Newt, and she woke up and she saw the containers on the ground. Right. Like you don't have to see nothing. You just see the containers on the ground. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You know? Yeah. And you know what that means.
Right.
You know what the container on the ground means. You know. And I remember that night, man, when I went home and I was in my room and my dad, you know, he was kind of old school. So there was no nightlight. There was no, you know, none of that. It was going to room, nights out, doors closed.
Sure.
You know, and I remember I had a bunk bed at the time and I was on the top bunk. And I swear to you, I could see like a face hugger crawling over the dresser and, you know, all over the walls, man. And like, I got so scared. Like, I finally, like, I put the cover all over my body and buried my face in the pillow. And my thinking was that way, at least if it tries to get me, I'll have a second or two where it's not just on me. You know, I have to try to get around to me first.
Exactly.
Where I can try to do, you know, something, you know, which will probably be futile. But those face huggers, I mean, even more so than the xenomorphs, man. Just the thought of the face hugger jumping on your face and just giving you the business.
Right.
You know.
Pretty much impregnating.
You know, yeah. That was, you know. And it was so cool to me as I got older and looked at that. And, you know, and realize, like, that's inherently a woman's fear of rape, among other things.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Or
sure.
whatnot. But now you as a man get to understand what that feels like, you know. And so, that was that atmosphere, that suspense. And then not showing your whole hand, you know, you could just see that visual cue. Mm-hmm. You see that container's open and, you know, it's about to go down. You know, and it's just like that, you know, primal instinct, that fear.
And then the cut to the other side of the glass where it's silent.
Right.
Nobody can hear them.
Yeah. Yeah. No help. No cavalry's coming.
Right.
You know. Yeah. Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah. That's one of my favorites. The second one. The first one's brilliant.
Yeah.
The second one.
Yeah. Hey, you also talked about less is more. But in certain horror films, do you feel like, hey, there really needs to be a lot of gore here? Like in The Hills Have Eyes, there's one section where the dude reaches and grabs the baby and yanks it out of the right. woman's body. And it's like, man, that's so disgusting. But it's like, it got to the point that yeah. they wanted to make, that this dude is horrible. He's disgusting. He's nasty. Mm-hmm.
I think for those movies, yeah, you need that. But I think it just depends which avenue you're going to go down. Like, if you're going to, hey, uh-huh. let's have some fun. Here's some scenes like that with blood and guts, and that's cool too.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. But if you're gonna go like Insidious route or Conjuring, I think the tone to me less is more on those.
Right.
But obviously for Hills Have Eyes, yeah, you're gonna need more than that. I mean, that's just a fun ride. You know what I mean?
yeah. I think there's a balance, a line you got to look at with between what's gonna be gratuitous
uh-huh.
or what's getting the point across. You know what I mean? Right. Like you were just saying. And so to me, definitely, I think that scene, it got the point across. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I'm always a fan of that. Like, you know, no matter how far you feel you gotta go,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I have a short film concept that, you know, involves a baby getting his head bashed in. You know what Ooh. I mean? But it's crazy. But at the same time, for that particular project, like you were saying, how it depends on which, yeah. you know, for that particular project, that's needed. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Mm-hmm. But if it's something else where, let's say, you know, a woman is raped in the film or something else crazy, you know, that's disgusting, you know, and let's say if that continues to happen repeatedly, it's kind of like, all right, you made your point. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
we get it. We understand he's not a nice guy. You know, you don't got to keep showing that kind of violation
yeah.
over and over. Because it also desensitizes you to it.
Sure.
You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It gets to, like, the first one, you might be like, oh, wow, this is crazy. And then by the second or third, you're just like, all right, man, I'm going to go to the bathroom, I'm going to get some popcorn or something. And
right.
come back in and finish yeah. watching this. So, yes, I think it's a line you got to kind of straddle between what do you feel is necessary versus what are you doing just for shock value only.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times that's what's the kind of the messed up thing about it is you lose the shock value. Even though mm-hmm. you think you're adding to it, you lose it because you show too much of it.
And, you know, back to Get Out, I think that was too, it was pretty, well, it was different because he intertwined also an intellectual on a storyline plot too, and what mm. they were trying to achieve, and
mm.
body parts and surgeries and things like that. So that right there was another good thing about that movie. It separated it from some of these other ones that are going on. So hopefully we'll get more of that on some of these newer movies. But I'm also into the gore too sometimes. Mm-hmm, yeah. So, but I like to see different things.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Well, and I think there's a kind of a, you know, I think some of the best movies, period, especially in horror, are ones where you can kind of relate a normal, natural situation that might be horrific, but you don't think of it as horrific,
right?
Into like that horror, you know. So, like when we talked about Aliens, and you know, a woman naturally fears rape, and rightly so, or you know, I guess men in prison too, or whatever else,
right?
But you don't really think about that on a daily basis,
right?
Until you're watching Aliens. And then it's like, oh, man, like that would be ridiculously bad.
Right.
You know, or whatnot. And the same thing with Get Out to me is, you know, the thought of being trapped in your own body is something that can happen. You can get Lou Gehrig's disease or something else crazy. You know right. what I mean? And be in that situation, you know, but I mean, they took it a step further in that, you know, mm-hmm. and there's other issues they kind of explore with that. But just for the moment's sake, talking about being trapped in your own body, you know, that when you actually see it face to face is horrifying. Right. You know, it's absolutely yeah. horrifying, you know, but people can face that, you know,
sure.
and be trapped in that situation. So I think a lot of horror movies they're really well done when they explore something, you know, and put it in your face and make you have mm-hmm. to kind of confront it when normally you wouldn't confront it. Normally you wouldn't think about it.
Right.
Yeah. I was talking to my buddy of mine yesterday about Aliens, and he brought up a good point. These badass Marines going there.
Yeah.
And then now they run.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? Now they realize, like, we got to get out of here.
Yeah.
And
yeah. The cavalry's got to run.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
And to me, that's a form of horror right there, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and you were talking about different types of horror, too. One of my other favorite horror films is, it's called In the Mouth of Madness. You know what I mean? And it's really cool because it's not gory at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Although they have some bugged out moments in it. You know,
yeah.
But it's very Lovecraftian, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And I'm a big fan of that type of work. I mean, Lovecraft as a person, don't really care for, you know, because, you know, definitely yeah. there was some, you know, racial stuff and all that. But his work and the worlds that he kind of built and then mm-hmm. others that kind of carried on that kind of work or whatnot.
Yeah.
You know, including like Stephen King. Just a lot of that stuff is really, really cool to me. And some of the things I like about his type of work and what was in the Mouth of Madness is kind of the futility of the protagonist.
Okay.
When you got a protagonist that no matter what they do, it's still going down, you know?
Right.
But like, as any person would, they don't view it as this is futile or I can't change. They're looking like I'm going to do whatever I got to do and keep on, you know, trying to make things happen.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, ultimately it was futile, you know, okay, for the protagonist and did not work out well for him.
Mm. So, as indie filmmakers, as we are, how do you guys prepare for what you're going to shoot or what characters you're going to play, your horror tone or, for, you know, your tone in general for what you got going on? What is your thought process?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot to it. You know, it first off comes from the material to me. You know what I mean? Like you just, you know, like we alluded to earlier, you know, when we were talking horror films as far as what, how much gore is too much, how much is not enough. It's that same kind of thing. You got to look at the material and you got to decide what kind of tone you want to have with it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, do you want it to be really dark and over the top? Do you want it really dark and restrained? Do you want it, you know, kind of straddling that where it might seem like an everyday kind of thing, but moments pop out that are pretty horrific? You know, you got to really kind of know how you want to present the material, whether you wrote it, whether somebody else wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to know how you want to present that material first. And so an example, if you're, let's say you're doing a horror film and let's say in this particular horror film, it's really character driven. Like, let's say it's two people primarily in one location, like maybe they're snowed in and a stranger appears at a cabin when a guy is snowed in waiting for his wife to arrive or something, you know, hypothetical, you know, whatnot. So me seeing that, you're looking at it. And if it's only going to be two people, obviously, you know, nobody's going to get killed right away.
Right.
You know, at least unless more visitors come.
Right.
So to me, that's saying that it's not going to be an overly gory film. It's not going to be an over the top kind of film. Most of the tension is going to be between the two individuals, you know, and how they react. Maybe the guy that comes at first seems kind of normal, but then progressively seems crazier or worse or whatever else. So you're going to kind of have this claustrophobic type of setting you're trying to create, you know.
Yeah.
And so for me, that would mean, OK, we want to make this really atmospheric. You know, we want to try to keep the shots very tight as much as possible. Maybe when you first start off, the initial shots are very wide and everything feels kind of spacious. But the crazier that guy starts sounding, the more you start making those lenses where it's going to be very tight on as many shots as possible, because you're trying to infuse that claustrophobia, you know, and let the audience get a peek into that claustrophobia, you know. And then, like you said, with the sound design, you know, that's going to be huge also, you know. And so maybe initially with that snowstorm, maybe everything, you know, he hears the snowstorm very loudly in the beginning, the protagonist does.
Right.
And maybe, you know, even like the tea he has boiling in the kitchen is very loud.
Yeah.
But as guys getting sounding crazy and crazy that's trapped in there with them, maybe you remove most of those sounds.
Okay.
And now you don't really hear anything except for that guy. Maybe you hear that guy's breathing and you know, and you hear, like, even when he smacks his lips in between talking, like, he's, you know, we got him eating, you know, maybe all that stuff you hear accentuated now and those other sounds fade away or they're real low, you know. So it starts, you know, always with the material, you know, for me. I don't know, like, how you take it as far as playing.
As far as the actor, I think that for me, and any role really, is the atmosphere of that character's mindset. Like, does he have children? Is he married? Is he going through a divorce? Are these things that are on his mind? You know, is he doing well financially? Is he not doing well financially? Like, what is the mind state of this character, so that when I get into this other person's mind, I can feel the tension,
okay,
you know, and then hopefully, you know, the filmmakers can capture that tension, the tension in my eyes. Like, I can't believe this is happening, or whatever is happening, whatever the situation is. Like, we're being chased right now. They need to see that fright. They need to see that me being scared, right? So for me personally, you know, in terms of preparation for any piece, especially horror, I like to really get into the material first to find out what the tone of the entire film is.
Do you find yourself building on your own some kind of character traits as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I know some people are method actors and they walk around scared in between sets and stuff. And I started doing that when I was doing theater, but I kind of grew out of that.
Right.
So for me personally, I don't do that. But I do draw on either past experiences or, hey, there was this situation that made me afraid.
Okay.
Or this, I felt, you know, actually I have a friend who is claustrophobic when we get in elevators. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I look at his reaction, you know what I'm saying? And I learn from little things like that. Okay, like I can tell that he's tense right now.
Right.
So I glean from little things from that, and then I might watch other films and see what I can glean from that and these other characters, and then I create my own character and determine that works for them, but maybe that doesn't work for me.
Okay.
Or this does work that I got from a past experience. I can pull from that. You know? Okay.
That's interesting. Yeah, Michael Mann, who's my favorite director, he really builds layers for his characters. Like an example would be in Collateral, mm-hmm. Jada Pinkett's role. As well as Tom Cruise and who else is that? Jamie Foxx, right? Well, what he did was he presented them. He had her hang out with a lady that would have been her mother, you know, mm-hmm. on some day off from Miami Vice. So Colin Farrell, he presented, you know, this house is where you grew up at, mm-hmm. you know, pictures yeah. of houses. And it really adds layers. And I think it really helps to build your character instead of here's a script and memorize your lines. And
right.
And I try to do that, you know. I try to, you know, maybe type up some type of bios for the characters and talk to them about it. And whether or not they take that and run is, mm-hmm. is one thing. But I just find that interesting how you know, actors can build characters. You've done a lot of acting. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you do that?
Yeah, no, definitely. That's a part. I remember one of the first shorts I was in that I was cast in. I had to fly out to go do it. And the director, when I went and met with him, I gave him 2 pages of background I wrote for my character.
Okay.
And just was like going over it with him. And he was like, he kind of was just like, oh, wow, you did all that? Like, you yeah. you know, for mm-hmm. the short film.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, he was, I think it helped me get yeah. into that character's head big time. And he was really impressed, you know, by it. But yeah, no, I definitely agree that, you know, the whole thing really to me is not so much that I want to try to portray this character. Mm-hmm. I just want to figure out how I can be this character just right. for that small amount of time. You know right. what I mean? Like Michael, you know, right. said that I don't have to necessarily, you know, be him in between takes. I don't necessarily have to be him, you know, when I right. go home at night, none of that stuff, you know, but how can I be him just for, you know, between action and cut, you know, or whatever else, you mm-hmm. know? And so to me, kind of like what Michael said also, I try to find past experiences. Mm-hmm. Especially if it's like something where it's traumatic, or if it's, you know, if it's sad or whatever else, try to find, even if it's not an experience I had, but something that might make me sad. You right. know what I mean? I try to right. think of what things make me sad and then try to associate that with whatever mm-hmm. that particular moment is for that character as much as I yeah. can, you know? So try to, whenever I'm reading that line or going through that line or what have you, I try to think of those things mm-hmm. so that I kind of associate them with when this moment happens, this is how I'm feeling, you know, okay. kind of thing.
Right.
You know, and I think another thing for me, too, with it is I wouldn't say necessarily I'm not as a director. I'm not really really strict on the script as far as you got to have this exactly how it is.
Right.
To me, it's always kind of inject some of yourself into that character. Mm-hmm. So it's not even necessarily like that character is exactly who I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
That character is like a hybrid of what I wrote and who you are. you know what right. I mean? And that's why you right. were cast in
sure,
that role.
Sure.
Because it's like a hybrid of that, you know? So I don't when I'm acting or when I'm directing, I don't necessarily worry about nailing every single word on the script. It's like, right. as long as you got the spirit of what that line's supposed to be, cool. Unless it's like something real specific, like, you know, the killer dropped his 9mm and then, you know,
right.
the hero mentions it later on. So, you know, if it's something that's that specific, cool. You know, but if it's just, you're upset because of an issue with your childhood, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? As long as you communicate what that issue was, if that's what the scene's about, and right. they respond to what that issue was, I don't care if you use correct grammar or slang, I don't care, you know, mm-hmm. as long as it's in role with what your character is and you've built it, you know, up to that particular point.
If I could piggyback off of that, I think that with you bringing the 2 pages to that director, it kind of shows the work ethic.
Yeah.
And for some people, some actors, I mean, for anyone who's listening, I think you really have to do the research. You really got to do the yeah. research.
Sure.
You got to do the background. You got to find out who this character is. What is their past experiences, the character? Mm. What are they thinking about their future? You know, how would this character feel in this given situation? Otherwise, I mean, how are you going to portray that character?
Right.
You know, it's not just reading lines and memorizing and regurgitating them.
Yeah. Right.
Because then you can have a great script, a great cast, great cameras, great sound equipment, and then you go to shoot it, and people are just regurgitating stuff.
Yeah, man.
You know what I'm saying? So it's in particularly with horror. Yeah. I mean, horror and comedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Horror. I mean, it's all about timing. It's all about lighting and this, that, and the other. But if you aren't able to get into that character and show us, the audience, that this character is scared, then it's kind of...
You got problems.
Yeah, you got problems. Yeah. Often enough, problems. Yeah. So doing that research is really big. And then finding out who this character is, doing research, finding out some other characters that are similar to that character, and then really finding out what fits for you as an individual to portray that character.
So on stage and in front of a camera, do you... pretty much forget about everything around you? I mean, are you in that, once they say action, I mean, are you cognizant of everything around you, or does that go away, or how do you play with that?
A mixture of both.
Okay.
A mixture of both. I think in theater sometimes, we were talking about this earlier off camera, but sometimes when you have a performance, I actually like to look at the audience. I like looking at them. I like directing certain lines toward them. And then I'll go back to the person right here and say a line that's pertinent to them. Then I'll go back to the middle of the audience. Then I'll move downstage, upstage, and I like to work it. And actually, when I rehearse, I actually do that myself.
Wow.
So that when I get to, so when I get to Pride's set,
right,
he doesn't have to tell me how to be an actor. He has to tell me, okay, that doesn't work for this shot.
Right.
Or tweak it this way or turn that way when you do it. You know what I mean? So.
And you're okay with direction and
Oh, I love it.
Okay.
I love it. I've always said to myself, or actually not said to myself, I always learned actually from one educator when I took a class that amateurs rehearse so they don't mess up. Professionals rehearse so they can't mess up. So okay. It's more about how much is your commitment to this character? And right. If you have that commitment to the character, you know, you'll be on stage. In film, a little bit, for me, it's a little bit more, I am drowning out everything else.
Okay.
I don't necessarily know why, but I know that if it's something intimate with another person, I'm deadlocked on in, you know, into that person and that character in that moment versus, because it doesn't really matter about the scenery unless it does matter in the script. But when I'm on stage, I like a little bit of everything.
How did you prepare for the waves?
The waves, that was very hard because it was a 48.
Yeah, so, it was 48.
It was
man.
A 48. Wow. So everything was written, shot, edited, and everything in 48 hours. So, you know, you do a little bit of research on your phone. You just, you know, while you're like, looking right. stuff up, you know, looking at dialects and how I can say, you know, these lines because I'm a terrorist. So, yeah. Let me listen to a couple of things and then see what works for me. And then you just, you know, you go out and shoot and hopefully you kill it, you know.
So, talk to me about that shoot, man.
Yeah, like you said, you know, it was 48 hours.
Right. You
know? And it actually was, for me, it was less than that. You know, when I do competitions, I normally, you know, maybe get 4 hours of sleep. Maybe. You know okay. what I mean? Because normally I write and direct them, and then normally I write, direct, and edit minimally.
Right.
Yeah, and then I may shoot it. You know, I may even play a role in it, depending,
right.
you know what I mean, on how things go. And so with the waves, It was actually about an hour and a half away from where I live at. So we went to the kickoff. We got there. I found out, you know, they gave us the genre. We, you know, and all that. I came up with the idea pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was between that and another idea. The other idea was kind of more silly, crazy, goofy.
Yeah.
And I was like, nah, I'm not really feeling that. So I kind of settled on that right away. What the waves became. You know, we have this couple that are going through marital issues who went to this kind of resort to kind of make things work.
Right.
But then the resort was overrun by these gorillas, and now, you know, they are facing imminent death, you know, whatnot, while they're still trying to fix their marital issues. And but I realized right away that all the props and costumes that I would need to do that were back in my crib an hour and a half away. You know what I'm saying? So, I, you know, after we got dismissed, I was like, okay, you know, I'm just going to have to bite the bullet and drive back and get them and then come back out, you know. And so I spent about 2 hours getting the logistics done, contacting the team, letting everybody know what time to expect stuff, you know, letting them know what direction we were going, you know, when I'd have a script ready, when I'd let them know what characters, who was playing what, you know, then rolled out, picked it up, wrote the script that night, got back on the road about 2 a.m, got back out, mm-hmm. you know, and got into it. And then like any project, you know, some things roll smooth, some don't. For the most part, it went smooth. But one of the biggest things with it was it's called The Waves. And there were several key scenes I wanted at the beach. And we just ran out of time. There was no way we could get to the right. beach to shoot those. So we just, you know, like you always do, you just figure out what can we do that can work where we can get as close to that as possible. Sure. And where the audience sure. won't really know mm-hmm. the difference. So we shot them, you know, in a way that I felt worked. Okay. For that, you know, we blew out the sky, we put the seagulls in, we put the sound of waves in mm-hmm. and all that.
I bought it.
You know, and so it looked like it was, you know, it looked like it could be the beach, you know, conceivably. Yeah. You know, and so, but at first, when I first was, we weren't going to be able to get there, mm-hmm. you know, I was pissed. You know, yeah. I was pissed at myself, you know, that I let the time get away from me like that, you right. know, during the course of the day. But overall, I mean, we got everything we needed to get. We got some nice drone shots of the beach that we also could insert at the beginning. So it kind of sure. plays into there and keeps mm-hmm. keeps that look seamless, you know, that they may have been at the beach. And then, you know, the actors were all great. I mean, Michelangelo Blackwell was super strong in it.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? And, we created, you know, like I said, our own kind of language mm-hmm. for the terrorists to use just mm-hmm. so we could have it, them sound that much more alien. Compared to the people that were there, you know, going mm-hmm. through it.
Were you set on Michael mm-hmm. playing that role, or were you kind of, maybe you should take this role? I mean, was
I mean, Michael's, I mean, he's such a strong actor, man, that it's yeah. like, you know, it's kind of like an embarrassment of riches as far as like him. But then on your end, it's like, okay, like, but where do I plug this in where it could be most effective?
Right, you right, know what right. I mean?
And so I felt like we had a very strong anchor as far as the wife. Of mm-hmm. the victims,
right?
A very strong actress, and her husband. You know, I really like his acting very well. He's a more of a comedic actor,
right?
And he actually was nervous about taking that role because of, well, man, like I'm more comedic. I don't really. I was like, no, I think you'll be fine, mm-hmm. especially with her. Right. You'll be okay. Right. And so I wanted to kind of have a balance on the other side of that, and sure. that's why I was like, okay, let's plug B-Well over yeah. there, you yeah. know,
right, right,
and then we kind of get that balance going. But no, but it was a great shoot, man, and I'm very proud of it. I actually got invited to another film festival for it about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Debating on it. I'm trying to see. They gave us a discount. I'm trying to see if they give any fee waivers completely.
Okay.
But if not, I'll probably still get down with it since they invited us. That's super cool, you know. But yeah, they had some one of their staff members saw it on Vimeo and really enjoyed it. They had heard about it from the, yeah. the competition. And so we got a lot of love too from the producers of the competition. I mean, okay. multiple kudos from them. The yeah. The woman who was part of the producing team for it, she said it was the first film she'd seen mm-hmm. at that competition in quite a long time that kept her in suspense the whole time. Mm-hmm. You know, when right. she watched it. So, and that's a credit to them, man. They just, you know, they brought it to life. So it was real cool, real cool.
Definitely, definitely.
You know, another thing I wanted to bring up too, man, when we were talking play set earlier.
Yeah.
You know, and this like. Horror films that kind of inspired me or made an impact on me. One of the things I liked when you mentioned just the word playset mm-hmm. and the kind of the outline, the concept you had for it, it made me really think of Lights Out. You know what I mean?
Really?
The short that later became a feature. You know, it seemed, because same thing with Lights Out. When I first saw that short, you know, it was isolated of me even knowing there would one day be a feature film, sure. et cetera, any of that right. stuff. Or even the filmmaker and his wife, you know, the yeah. team. I didn't know anything about them. I didn't know anything about a possible feature. I didn't know. All I know was I saw the title before I even watched the short. And I thought that was a really dope title
yeah.
for a horror film.
Yeah.
You know, because to me, it really got really to the core of something right. that could scare you or that could be scary. You know what I mean? Which is, you know, the lights going out, you know, or whatnot. Yeah. And for me, when you said play set, it kind of had that same kind of thing for me because, but in this case, it was because I knew you said horror. Mm-hmm. And so it intrigued me because it was like, okay, a play set, but something happens that's scary there. You know what I mean? Right. And so it was like, okay, lights out I got because it's like, okay, yeah, lights going out, of course, that's horror. Play set, I heard horror and play set, and it was like, okay, just one word now sounds scary to me. You right. know what I mean?
Yeah,
whereas,
yeah, yeah.
whereas before it was just like, oh, play said kid's gonna go play. Yeah. But yeah. then it was like, oh no, it's something scary about that now.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? And so that intrigued me. And then, you know, I love Lights Out, the short, and seeing the success they had with it. You know, him getting a chance to direct the full feature version of something that was just a short. Him being able to have his wife, you know, be in the feature version, you know what I mean, of it. You know, that just a short that they probably threw around on the couch and then came up with it and like, all right, let's do this, you know, kind of thing. Like, I love those kind of stories because as filmmakers, we all want to kind of have that same kind of success where we, you know, our hard work pays off and we get to play in a bigger sandbox, you know, whatever else you want to say with it. But what I'll bring this all, the point of me bringing this up, though, really is that to me, it's also like research. When you were saying, do your research. And to me, when you're doing like short films or, you know, even just skits or anything to me, I look at that not so much as like, by any means, just messing around or whatever else. I look at that, that all that stuff is like tests and research. You know what I mean? And you're flexing your muscles, you know, you're getting better at lighting or you're getting better at your sound design or you're getting better at your writing or you're getting better at, you know, how you direct your actors or if you're acting, you're getting better at how you convey certain emotions or whatever else, you know, and even on top of that, like when you're watching the Lights Out, the short film, and you're being inspired by these guys and this, his wife that, you know, have done, had some success. You're also looking at that and saying, well, what about that worked? Why, you know, why did that get such a reaction out of me? You know what I mean? And then you're trying to apply that to whatever you're doing. You know what I mean? So, you know, for me, Lights Out really, you know, it's an example of like doing that research and trying to say, okay, I'm trying to make this type of film. Let me look at as many comps of that type of film as I can and see what worked for them, what didn't work for them, and try to incorporate the best of that, hopefully, into whatever I'm doing, you know. But also, like I said, when we did Playset, man, like that was the, when you said that word after you said horror, and I thought, okay, a playset is now scary. The first thing I thought of was Lights Out.
Wow, man. That's pretty cool. I know the inspiration of Playset is every night when I lock the door, I look out there, you know, and I see it. And I you know, I kept thinking, what can we do? It's here. It's home. It's free. You know, I mean, well, it's included with everything. So let's try to make something with nothing, you know, with no monster. And I don't know. I think it came out pretty good. Again, it was, to me, less is more on that, you know. None of that. The only sound that I used, actually, was the kitchen dialogue and the dialogue on the patio. Everything else, you know, I flew in crickets to wind.
It's good.
To crunching. Because you can control all that.
You wouldn't know it.
So, I don't know. I'm pretty proud of that. I mean, it hasn't done anything yet. But, you know, I'm going to see what it does this year. And then let it go. It was lit beautifully. Did you come up with some kind of scheme? Or were you watching... doing some research on that?
It was a mix, you know what I mean? It was a mix. Like, you know, especially when she was in the house, I wanted to, I wanted her beautifully lit in the house and then also, but I wanted to have subtle hints of menace, you know what I mean? So that's why, like, we had a discussion about, like, adding some red.
You threw some red behind her.
Behind her and things, you know. So, you know, I wasn't going necessarily for, you know, a what you see is what you get. This is like how a kitchen would normally look.
Right.
It was, for me, it was atmospheric, like we talked about before. Like, so, cause I looked at this as, it's not going to be gory. It's not going to, you know, but it should be atmospheric. You know what I mean? And so that's what I was going for with that. And that's, you know, I was glad you were cool with it.
Cause
to me, that was like, okay, cool. We can do this.
For sure.
You know? And then when she got outside, especially because, you know, there wouldn't be any more, I mean, background kind of lighting that would really stand out, what have you.
Right.
The thing for me then was I wanted to have her lit enough that you could see like the emotions she was conveying, you know, but ideally still where it would be dark enough where you start feeling that kind of encroachment of a, like a presence almost. That darkness is a presence pressing up against her. So that was real, it was real cool. I enjoyed it. You know, I thought it came out really well. I thought your edit, man, was fantastic. I mean, there was stuff in there that when you edited it, when he did the edit, I looked at it and I was like, man, did we shoot that? Or did we? like, I don't remember shooting that, man. Did we shoot that?
Yeah.
You know, so it was real cool, man.
And my niece, Penelope, she played the little girl and that was her first run.
Yeah, she was great.
Did good,
she was
man.
She
was,
she's got it. Yeah. She's got it, you know.
She came back for some
And it was late, too.
Yeah, it was late.
It was late, man, you know. And she was great. She was really good in it.
We shot that July 21st. I think I was done with it just before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I think. Mm-hmm. But I like doing these now. You know, I think I'm getting a little, getting in the rhythm of these now. Yeah, this is the third one. So
you got a good setup. Yeah.
This keeps us talking about what we're doing. You
right.
know?
It
bridges us, I think. And we can share what you're doing and what you're doing, Pride, and keep building. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So anyways, it was great to meet you. I've seen a lot of your work, Michael.
It's good to be here.
Thank you for coming in, Pride.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yes, indeed, brother.
And we'll do it again.